not going to be long, Barry. Dear Heavenly Father, we just bless this day. You made a beautiful day in the beginning here for us, and let us just absorb it and absorb your word. And let it fill us like day does, and let us get what you want us to get out of it. Name my prayer.
Okay. Everybody can. So I'm just going to do a quick little. We don't have to go through the whole thing with Gideon, but I was going to go through the very end of the other chapter. And it says, verse 33 of chapter 8, it says, as soon as Gideon died, the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baals and made Baal-Berith their God. And the people of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hand of all their enemies on every side. And they did not show steadfast love for the family of Jerubbabel, that is Gideon, in return for all the good he had done to Israel. It's going to be an interesting thing. So already you can see as soon as this happens, you know, they're back to what they were doing before, you know, the Lord raised up somebody. But from now on, you'll see Gideon in the whole next chapter. He will be referred to as Jerubbabel. Anybody remember what it means? Wrestled, contends with Baal. There you go. So it'll be interesting that they say they turn back to Baal. And every time Gideon's mentioned in the next chapter, he's always Jerubbabel. He's always, and he's gone, but it's just there's references to him. So, chapter 9. This will be, it's probably, I almost could say it's the low point until you read further into the book and it goes lower.
Oh, my.
And he said to them,
what
have I done?
You,
yeah, there you go. All right. So, verse 1, chapter 9. Now Abimelech, the son of Jerubbabel, went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and said to them and to the whole clan of his mother's family, say in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbabel rule over you, or that one rule over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. First off, Abimelech's name means my father is king, which I find really, really interesting, because if you remember in the last chapter, the people wanted to make Gideon king, and he said, I will not rule over you nor any of my sons. So this, I guess one of the points I got out of the whole thing kind of going through this is I've kind of been through a different commentaries and stuff, and they're all like, you know, there is no king in Israel, everybody did what was right. But I think the book, one of the main points that none of them gather is the failure of parents. And this book is about the failure of parents. And there's a reason Jesus said, you know, teach your kids when they go to bed, when they get up, when they get, if you press upon them, now everybody's, you know, I was a rebellious kid, I was horrible, my poor mother. But all that was pressed in, and eventually at some point in my life, it all made sense. And parents have a responsibility, and I can see you have constant throughout the whole picture of the Bible, and there's going to be, I'm going to ask the interesting questions again. This book is about the failure of parents to bring their kids, to press upon their kids what's right. At least that's my feeling. That's something I get out of the book. And here what's, so you see, and I tried looking up concubines. And you get so many, some people say it's like a slave that lived with her mother and the guy just wanted to visit her. But then there's the point, and David has his concubines on the roof of his power. So I don't, nobody gives a definitive answer. I guess you just made up the rules of whatever you wanted her to be. But you see that always introduces trouble. And so you have a guy that has 70 kids. You know, and I just, you know, my daughter's here. I have four kids, and their personalities couldn't be any more different, all of them. You know, everybody has their own. So I can't imagine trying to deal with 70 personalities that keep, and especially, you'll see here, Abimelech is the son of the concubine. So I'm sure his brother said they don't get to inherit land. You know, and his brothers basically said, I'll tell you an interesting story then, I'll save that one. But he basically didn't get anything out of this. So he's feeling, you know, again, failure of the parents leads to, he said, okay, I'm going to get mine, right? I don't know how they came up with the name. I don't know if his mom did that or, but his father said, nope, I ain't going to be king nor my sons. And he gets named, my father is king. And now he decides, I want to be king. So here you get, the other thing is his mother's a Canaanite, which one more thing God said, don't do this, don't intermingle, it leads, I mean, look what it did to, you know, just about everybody in the Bible, David's family, everybody start, you marry women and, you know, for some reason they always come and there's some other worship some other god, and you're like, all right, I'll build you a temple, and you can worship your god. And it just leads to trouble within the land. So, again, years ago I spoke at church, and I talked about the boat wake of life. So I don't know if any of you are familiar. I grew up boating down by the water. And when you go between the piers, there's always these rules that say 6 mile an hour limit, no wake. And you can go through there, and you can be calm, and everybody's happy. Or you can go through there 60 miles an hour, everybody's boat slamming up against the pier, everybody's mad. And that seems to be the way some people go through life. Their boat wake is slamming everybody, everybody's mad, and things are just turmoil. And some people seem to enjoy that. I'm more of the 6 mile an hour guy. I'd like things to stay the same, but some people just don't get that. So here he goes to his mother's family, and he says, you know, I have 70 brothers that are going to, it's kind of interesting that he says, that rule over you. So I don't know, it doesn't give you the context whether they were ruling as a group. Did they just have more obviously their father made himself a nice 401k with all the gold and stuff, so you know how that's getting distributed and whether they have all the best stuff, and this guy's saying I got nothing. But he goes to his mother's family and says, you know, is it better for 70 of them that don't even know you or just me, and I'm of your bone and flesh, I'm family. And his mother's relatives spoke all these words on behalf of the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech. For they said, he is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-Berith, which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless fellows to follow him. So what's interesting, Baal-Berith means God of the Covenant. And it's going to be really interesting. Well, I'll get into Shechem in a minute. But Shechem is where Israel, Joshua gave them the cursing and the blessings. They were in the mouth. And Shechem's like the valley, and they yell, you know, here's the curses, here's the blessings. Decide which one you want. And God reaffirmed his covenant with his people. And here, the people worshiping Baal decided this is where they're going to set up their spot, and they're going to call it Lord of the Covenant. It's their temple in the spot. So you always see, you know, we always talk about Satan mimicking the plans of God and how he just kind of, Antichrist doesn't mean against Christ, it means in place of. It's a pseudo. And that seems to be the MO all the way back in the Old Testament. And so he said he went to his father's house at Ophrah, and killed his brothers, the son of Jerubbaal, 70 men on the stone. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. So, and not that it matters to me, but there's like some argument because it keeps talking about the 70, and then is there really 72? Because you'll see there's a Abimelech and one kid gets away. The numbers don't mean anything to me. I'm not that big a deal with that. But you can see the treachery of here, and it just, you know, people with unbridled drive and need to have something are a very, very dangerous. We talked about kind of businesses and how, you know, okay, you can say capitalism is greed and all that, but at one time, at least people kept a veneer of morality. And I think that kind of kept a lid on it that, hey, we can make money, but everybody can benefit from this. And once you take that veneer, even if it's just a veneer of any kind of morality, unbridled greed and drive is just a really, really dangerous thing.
You know, the thing about the 70 sons is you have God's view on commanding a woman. And you have, he had 70 sons. So obviously it wasn't one woman. I never heard of it. Of course,
course you still have baby day with your daughter.
Obviously he had a concubine, so I am assuming that there's more than one wife. So with that being said, God may have been showing that he had his eyes set on his lineage more than himself. Just like Ahab thought his lineage was going to be his thing, and the same thing, 70 sons dead.
Yep.
So is it God saying, you know, it's fine to look towards you, but you don't think you can give me more, put out more than what I can handle?
Well, this is just where the nations and the dispersion.
The 70.
I have a feeling there's something there, but I'm not.
Yeah. It's funny because I make a mention of the Divine Council kind of comes up in here. And but what's always interesting, there's always a remnant. You know? If you know anything about, like, even the House of David, there was times when they killed, was it Ahaz? Killed all the babies, and the one baby was hidden and got away. There's always that little remnant that God seems to, you know, find a way to get them and shield them from. And he's going to be a real interesting character real soon here, too. So, I always have those teasers. I should be on radio, right? We can go to commercial. And all the leaders of Shechem came together at Beth Milo, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar at Shechem. And I just thought it was funny that they made him king at the place where Israel had renewed their covenant. It was like, one more time, Satan kind of poking God, saying, look what I can do. You know what I mean? Look what I've replaced you. I've soiled your covenant spot. When it was told to Jotham, he went and stood on the top of Mount Gerizim and cried aloud and said to them, which is kind of interesting, this is where the covenant was renewed. So evidently this is like a, they call it a natural amphitheater, where you could speak and it could be heard in a great distance. So he's standing up on top of this mountain, and he cried aloud and said to them, listen to me, you leaders of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went out to anoint a king over them, and they said to an olive tree, reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, shall I leave my abundance, by which gods and men are honored, and go hold sway over the other trees? I personally believe this is kind of the reference here to Gideon. Like, he was, Israel's always represented by the olive tree. And we're talking about the vine, the olive branch, you know, all that. That here, he's kind of talking about his dad saying, no, I'm not. I'm really, really good candidate, and I'm not going to do it. I don't feel worthy. And he said, and the tree said to the fig tree, you come and reign over us. And the fig tree said to them, shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go hold sway over the trees? And the tree said to the vine, you shall come and reign over us. And the vine said to them, shall I leave my wine that cheers God and men and go hold sway over the trees? Then all the trees said to the bramble, you come and reign over us. And we were talking with Scott, bramble, we'll get into that in a minute. And the bramble said to the trees, if in good faith you're anointing me king over you, then come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. So he's basically saying constantly they were trying to make somebody king. And there were some very, very good choices that were wise enough to say, no, I'm not doing this. You know, God said, don't do this. I'm not doing this until the appointed time. And they came to the most worthless of trees, the bramble, or in some it says the thorns, which is an interesting thing if you think about it, representing sin and the crown of thorns that eventually Jesus will wear in our stead. But the thorns said, yeah, I guess they had nothing to lose at that point, right? So they're like, oh, yeah, we'll do this. And he's saying, well, didn't do this in good faith, there's going to be problems. So he says, so this is again Gideon's son standing on top of the mountain yelling. And he says, now, therefore, if you have acted in good faith and integrity when you made Abimelech king, and if you have dealt with well with Jerubbaal and his house, and have done to him as his deeds deserve, for my father fought for you and risked his life and delivered you from the hand of Midian, and you have risen up against my father's house this day and have killed his sons, 70 men on one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the leaders of Shechem, because he is your relative. If you then have acted in good faith and integrity with Jerubbaal and all his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the leaders of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come from the leaders of Shechem and Beth Milo and devour Abimelech. And it's kind of interesting that Beth Milo here means it was like a citadel within the city. Nothing seems to be exactly concrete, but from the best I can find, I put the definition down at the bottom there so you can. So it's kind of like a fortress in, and a lot of cities had, you know, the walled cities, but then as always, the rich people had their own place, and the powerful people where they would go, you know, be like, hey, good luck with that at the gates, we'll be back here, we got your back, you know, that kind of thing. So it looks like what this Beth Milo place is.
I have a curious thought. Whenever it says the 70 were killed with one stone. On one stone. But what do you think that means? Like, because there's 19 of us in here, so do you think the others would have tried to run or retaliate or?
Well, it's the men of Shechem, so I'm assuming the whole city just swarmed them, and they brought them up one by one, I guess, the way you would. I would think. I wasn't there. I don't want to, you know, but it does say maybe it was a real big rock. You know, you can do three or four at a time. I don't know. But you're right. There's a reason, and I guess they're going to bring some stuff on his head. So here's what we were talking, Scott, and it says, and God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem, and the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. So first off, I find it, I always throw it out there to you guys, if you're interested, read the Unseen Realm, and how it always has, there's kind of a divine council here where a couple times in the Bible it says they're all seated and God is God. Nobody else is God. He has a set of attributes that nobody else has, but he seems to be interested in all of us working with him to bring about his will. And there's a couple times in the Bible where he sits down and says, all right, this guy's doing something bad. Anybody have any ideas how we can deal with him? And it says, so-and-so spoke up, and so-and-so spoke up, and a spirit spoke up and said, I'll go down, this was with Saul, and I'll mess with his mind. And God said, okay, let it be. So this kind of gives me that same kind of feeling here, where it's weird for us to say, and God sent an evil spirit. That's an unusual, but it just shows that he orders. He's in charge of everything. It isn't like, I mean, you know, a couple religions have like Jesus and Satan on an equal footing, and, you know, God's up here, and it's like, nah, Jesus and God are up here. Everything else is below them, and everything else is under his control, and he'll use whatever he needs to bring about his purposes. So it's kind of interesting, and they dealt treacherously with Abimelech. You just see so many, again, I grew up on Westerns, and I think this is like a lot of themes of a good Western is, you know, somebody deals treacherously with somebody, but in the end, the dude with the white hat always rides in and gives them their up and comings. So I can, this is kind of the theme that's going to, you know, come out over this. And it says, and they dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood might be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and to the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands, that killed his brother. And the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops, and they robbed all who passed along the way. And I just, again, back to my evil leaders will use crime to their evilness just seems to be, it spawns this. We're seeing our cities devolve into, you know, third world countries. We're just seeing the rule of law just, and every time, and personal political opinion, evil leadership kind of brings this, it just breeds this that's happening. And here, what's kind of interesting, you get the feeling that they're robbing people that are on Abimelech's business. So this is basically Robin Hood Robin Hood's merry men robbing from Robin Hood. You know, so he's not going to be too happy about this. So, and it was told to Abimelech, and Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved to Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. So this guy is basically what we would call a spy. And I don't get the feeling they know it, but Abimelech is smart enough to say, hey, buddy, take your family, kind of just act like you're just passing through and go into the town. And he kind of ends up, you know, at the city gates where all commerce and the leadership is kind of done to give me a feel for what's going on here. And it says he was slick enough that the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. And they went out into the field and gathered the grapes from their vineyards and tried them and held a festival. And they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. So here, always, you know, you always see a lot of gangster movies. You'll see the head gangster, when he's not down, everybody's like, we don't have to listen to him anymore. We can do this. And that's basically what's happening here. And now they're going to add a little alcohol to the fire, and that's going to be figuratively and in reality, and that's going to really light the fire. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, who is Abimelech, and who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal, and is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him? And would that people under my hand, then I would remove Abimelech, and I would say to Abimelech, increase your army and come out. And so here you always have like that one guy that's always ready to challenge. I personal history. So there was a church I knew that the pastor was struggling with some his own problems. And there was one of the guys on staff that just could not wait to make this known to the congregation because he really wanted to be pastor. So it just goes to show this stuff does not only go on in the world. You know, it's a human trait, and we can do it in the most quote-unquote religious content of anybody. There's always somebody to look and take your place. And the best part about it, if you're really doing what you're supposed to do, and you don't even have to hold on to it. It's like, if God wants to replace me, I'm okay with that. There'll be something else to do. You know, if you're really the guy for this job, I'm okay for that. But for people that are trying to, so the outcome of that story was he finally, you know, enough times he presented this guy's props at a congregation, that pastor was out, he was in, and within 6 months, this thriving church, the building's empty. They had to sell a place. Because treachery just, I mean, it's like the, I always, you know, how many times in history, Benedict Arnold betrayed the United States, he ended up going to Britain, and the British people hated him. It's basically like, if you're willing to turn your back on your relatives and your family and your country, we don't trust what you're going to do to us. I mean, and that's constantly the way, when somebody uses treachery to come into power, there's always somebody willing to be more treacherous than him to take him out. And that's what you're going to kind of see here. So when Zabul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, remember this is the spy, words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled. And he sent, and I meant to tell you, Zebul means Lord of the Earth. So it's kind of interesting that I thought my own content, you know, we say things we don't really mean sometimes. And you have an accuser who's the Lord of this earth who's going to run to somebody and tell, look what he said. Look what he said. And when the day comes, you'll either have to stand there and say nothing because, yeah, he ain't telling no lies. He's telling them exactly what I said. Or you're going to stand in front of somebody who's going to say, I didn't hear that. I looked down and saw my son, and he's fine. So that's going to be your choice. So I think it's kind of interesting that the names in here flow through that. So you have an accuser who is the Lord of this earth who's going to run and tattle on you. So just remember that. So he sent messengers secretly to Abimelech, secretly saying, behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his relatives have come to Shechem, and they are stirring up the city against you. Now, therefore, go by night, you and the people who are with you, and set an ambush in the field. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city, and when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as your hand finds to do. So Abimelech and all the men who were with him rose up by night and set an ambush against Shechem in four companies. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city, and Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from the ambush. When Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, look, people are coming down from the mountaintops. And Zebul said to him, you mistake the shadow of the mountains for men. So, again, so what he's doing here is playing the, you don't see, there's nobody getting ready to attack, everything's going to be fine. Sit down, have breakfast, and it'll all be good. So he looks again and says, look, people are coming down from the center of the land, and one company is coming down from the direction of the diviner's oak. So obviously this, there's four companies, there's people coming from different directions. So Zebul said to him, where is your mouth now? You who said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him, and are not these people whom you despise? Go out now and fight with them. So he basically said, put your money where your mouth is. You know, you ran your mouth, you were drinking, you ran your mouth, now let's see if you can stand behind it. So Gaal went out at the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. So now they basically called his bluff, so he'd have no power anyway. If he didn't go out and fight, they would turn him over. So you might as well go out and fight.
Hey, Chris, back to the Satan adversary.
Mm-hmm.
Who's he talking to? Because it's really important. He talks to the one who spoke, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in the New Testament, it says that he stands daily before the Lord accusing their brother, right? And I've been thinking about that lately, is I believe when we're walking and doing stupid, different things, it's not that Satan's standing before God accusing us. I think he's standing before God that we don't get there accusing us to ourselves. And he just put in front of his face exactly what he said. Now what are you going to do about it? And that's what the enemy always does with us. God sees you clean and forgiven, but the only place he can mess with you is you. With condemnation, you know, and pointing out your failures and faults and your inability to complete what you said. And that's what the enemy does all the time. And it's directly right back at him. So his own words are coming back on him. And so that's how the enemy wants to stand before you to accuse you, to make you feel like you don't have a right to come to the Lord. To be so guilty and feel so condemned that you can't pass through and get past by faith. Say, no, I'm clean and forgiven.
All right. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many fell wounded upon the entrance of the gate. And Abimelech lived at Arumah. I never could find much about that. And Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not dwell in Shechem. So, you know, he basically, I guess it's saying he lived through the battle. A bunch of people got killed. It seems to... The shame that the people that always bring the disaster aren't always the one to pay the price, but... And it said, on the following day, the people went out into the field, and Abimelech was told. So I guess the other side is he might have received some kind of safety in the city. Maybe they shut the gates or whatever at some point. So it said, now that they're throwing them out, they got to open the gates and go out. So it says, the following day, the people went out into the field, and Abimelech was told... He took his people and divided them into three companies and set an ambush in the fields. And they looked and saw the people coming out of the city. So he rose against them and killed them. And Abimelech and the company was with them, rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the city gate while the two companies rushed upon who were in the field. So they basically cut them off so they couldn't retreat back into the city. And they killed them. So I wanted to go back and reread the prophecy that the son... that wasn't killed, Jothan, that wasn't killed in the original, the killing of the sons. It says, now therefore, so this is Judges 9, 16 through 20. Now therefore, if you have acted in good faith and integrity, when you made Abimelech king, and if you have dealt with Jerubbaal and his house and have done to him as his deeds deserve, for my father fought for you and risked his life and delivered you from the hand of Midian, and you have risen up against my father's house this day and have killed his sons, 70 men on one stone, and have made Abimelech, son of his female servant, king over the leaders of Shechem, because he is your relative. If you have acted in good faith and integrity with Jerubbaal and his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech and let him rejoice in you. But if not, let the fire come out from Abimelech and devour the leaders of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come out of the leaders of Shechem from Beth Milo and devour Abimelech. So, just to bring that back to mind. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he captured the city and killed the people who were with it, and razed the city and sowed with it salt. So... kind of interesting if anybody knows what the salting, I think, did the Russians do that in World War II? I believe that they were retreating, so the Germans would have not. They couldn't grow any produce, and it gets into the, so this is like, that. This is like, you're dead, and this place is going to be
barren
from now on. And when the leaders of the towers of Shechem heard it, they entered the stronghold of the house of El-Barith. And this is back to that tower. And Abimelech was told that the leaders of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. And Abimelech went up to Mount Zalman. And it's kind of funny. Mount Zalman means place of the idol. And all the people were with him, and they took an axe in his hand and cut down a bundle of brushwood. So I think it's kind of a metaphor here that they always build idols most of the time. If you have gold, you could build a cheap wooden idol. So here these guys are at the place of the idol, and they're taking the wood that you would use to build an idol, and they're going to kill the idol worshippers with it. It's going to be interesting. And Abimelech went to the mount where all the people with him, and Abimelech took an axe and cut down a bundle of brushwood and took it up and laid it on his shoulder, and the men who were with him, what you have seen me do, hurry and do as I have done. I found it interesting that if you remember, Gideon at one point says, he went from being this little farmer and this, you know, scared, like all of us would be, to the point when he was going to, he has got a trumpet in one hand and a little clay pot in the other. He don't even have a weapon, but he said to all these guys, follow me, do what I do. And basically you see this guy doing it out of pride as opposed to what Gideon was doing. And it's kind of interesting that, I mean, Paul even says in the New Testament that certain people say, look, be like me, do what I'm doing. And, you know, when the people are doing right and when they're doing the right thing, that's a great thing. And that's something up for our discernment to understand who you're lining up behind. And so it says, so every one of the people cut down his bundle and followed Abimelech and put it against the stronghold. And they set the stronghold on fire over them so that the people of the tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women. And Abimelech went to Thebes and encamped against Thebes and camped to them. But there was a strong tower within the city, and all the men and the women and all the leaders of the city fled and shut themselves in it, and they went up on the roof of the tower. And Abimelech came to the tower, fought against it, and it drew near the door of the tower to burn it with fire. And a certain woman threw an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. And it's funny because the end of the last prophecy was, and fire shall come out of Shechem and devour. So evidently the people of Shechem have moved here and are trying to hide with these people. And he's trying to, you know, kill every one of them. So that kind of makes, fulfills the, completely the prophecy.
Didn't Gideon build, burn a tower down also?
Yeah, and he thrashed them on the
thrashing.
Well,
and he thrashed the others down.
Yeah.
But he only did one tower.
Right.
And he lived.
Well, look at what Abimelech's guy said to him. He said about the one, but not the other. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He said, go do what you do to them, but not the next one. He went, kept going.
Right. And he called quickly to the young man, his arm bearer, and said to him, draw your sword and kill me, lest they say of me, a woman kill me. And the young man thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, everyone departed and went to his home. Thus God returned the evil of Abimelech, which he had committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers. And God also made all the evil in the men of Shechem return their heads. And upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Zerubbabel. And I always thought, what, sitting and dwelling on this, this is Absalom, if anybody remembers. Does anybody see the, that I see the parallels in this? And again, it goes to David seemed to be a warrior who's a man after God's heart, but he was a complete and utter failure as a father until I feel like the end, with his son, did he finally like prepare him to be king? But even then, it ends up being a split in the kingdom, and it's just so all throughout history, this book is saying, you know, everybody did what was right in their own eyes. But I think if you look at the root cause, you can say, yeah, it's easy to say. Hey, everybody's doing right with that, everybody's wrong, you know, everybody's got their relative. But the bottom line of that is the failure of parents and the failure over time to pass down a set of covenants that God had given you and said, right at this place where all this took place, you know, how many 300 years earlier we had said, no, we're going to do this, and if we don't, here's the curse. No, we're going to do this. And we're on the curse side of that problem. Like, we just forget so quickly when that's not passed down generationally. And with them, it's kind of even worse because they were supposed to be read the book of Deuteronomy yearly. And the law would be, and they've gotten away from that. So it just goes to show you some, you know, we've got, probably since when I grew up in the 60s, a lot of parents have given things over to the school system to teach your kids about sex
and
the church and all these other things instead of in your home where that was meant to be. And we're seeing, we're reaping the whirlwind of that now because the people teaching your kids just are mind-blowing.
Right.
or the kids, I should say. That's not just. So, comments, questions, any?
History repeats itself.
That is us.
But the parents, everything, like you said, you're not going to.